Everybody. I'm Karen Hartglass. It's time for It's All About Food. And thank you once again for joining me. If you're new to this program, thank you. What we talk about on this show, It's All About Food. Try and guess. We talk about food. And for me, food is related to just about everything in life. And food can help us feel good. Food can make us feel bad. Food is connected to a lot of political issues, poverty, and cruelty for humans and non-humans. Food is a powerful thing. We can't live without food, at least not for very long. And I love food. And what I love about the food that I choose to eat is that it's the gentlest on the planet and is so delicious. And I feel so good eating it. Every bite, all the time. I get very excited about food. We post a lot of healthy recipes on our nonprofit website, responsibleeatingandliving.com. And we're coming to the end of the year. And this is a time when a lot of nonprofits have fundraisers, and we've put up an end of the year report. You're welcome to go to responsibleeatingandliving.com and learn more about us and our accomplishments this year. You can read about that. And something I don't talk about much on this program is one of the things that we do other than archiving and transcribing this weekly show, which we've been doing for almost 8 years, and creating lots of wonderful recipes that we offer for you for no charge. You know, I'm a cancer survivor of advanced ovarian cancer. And one of the things that I do is offer a free consultation for people that are going through cancer. We do coaching at Responsible Eating and Living, and most of the time helping people transition to a healthy diet, we do that for a fee. But for someone who's in an emergency crisis, I am happy to speak with them and share with them my experience and provide resources that I believe can be very helpful. So I just want you to know that. And if you know someone who's in a crisis like that, you can have them email me at info@realmeals.org. And while we're in the holiday spirit and gift giving, I just want you to know if you do donate to responsibleeatingandliving.com for $35 or more, you can receive a book that I was a part of this year, 25 Women Who Survived Cancer, Inspiring Stories of Hope. And people like Fran Drescher have contributed to this book, and Patty LuPone, Robin Roberts, Ruth Heydrich. There are some wonderful stories in here. They're very inspiring. If you know someone in a crisis and you want to give them a great book, or you just want to share inspiring stories from many women who have survived cancer, this is a great book, and we're giving it to you for free with a $35 or more donation to responsibleeatingandliving.com. Find out more at our website. Okay? Awesome. Now, let's move to my first guest. Ashley Melillo is a school psychologist and the writer, photographer, and recipe creator behind Blissful Basil, a blog dedicated to unearthing the happiest side of life through wholesome plant-based foods. With roots in both psychology and plant-based nutrition, Ashley is fascinated with the way that diet and lifestyle choices affect physical, cognitive, and emotional wellness. She incorporates a wide array of natural health-enhancing ingredients into her recipes with the hope of guiding others on their path towards improved well-being, all while enjoying delicious food. You can have your health and eat cake, too. She holds a certificate in plant-based nutrition from the T. Colin Campbell Center for Nutrition Studies, and her recipes have been featured in Women's Health, Red Book, The Huffington Post, and Shape, among others. She lives in Chicago with her husband, Dan, and orange tabby cat, Jack. And we're going to be talking about her book, Blissful Basil, Over 100 Plant-Powered Recipes to Unearth Vibrancy, Health, and Happiness. Hi, Ashley.
Hi, Karen. Thank you so much for having me.
And I am happy whenever I hear about people who are out there doing what I think is so important, and that is sharing healthy, delicious food that is so good for us and great for the planet and is the best tasting stuff around.
Yes, me too.
Yeah, I get a little too excited about it, and I read your book and really enjoyed it. And some of the recipes, we'll dig into that later, because they're really creative. There are some interesting mixes in here that I haven't seen, which is exciting.
Well, thank you. That is exciting.
It is, because we do a lot of cooking here, and it's just nice when something grabs my attention. Now, I want to dig into anxiety a little bit. You talk about it quite a bit in your book and your personal experience with anxiety, and now you're a school psychologist. This is an interesting time with the political atmosphere. A lot of people are feeling anxiety. Some of us are born with it. Some of us have had trauma, and some of us are just feeling it because these are crazy times. So let's talk about anxiety and how food can help.
Yes. So without going into all the details of the story, my personal experience has really been that food has been able to provide this sort of peace and contentment within my life by eating healthier whole foods, plant-based meals. And I think just in general with anxiety, you know, I think it's tempting to think that maybe there's this quick fix, whether you're feeling anxiety for a specific time, you know, regarding the election or related to that or whatever it might be, or the events going on in the world, or if you have been fighting it throughout your life. I think it's tempting to think that there might be this sort of quick fix. And what I've really found for myself, and I think this holds true for a lot of people, just based on my experiences as a psychologist too, is that there are fixes, but it's sort of building up these habits and making these small choices day in and day out that really vote in favor of your entire well-being and your health all around. So your cognitive, mental, and emotional health, and your physical health as well. So I think when you have all those components in place, and when they're all kind of aligning and jiving with one another, then it helps alleviate that anxiety and provide a sense of peace.
I can't talk enough about planning and being organized, but when your mind is foggy or your mind is full of fear and there are voices and so many things clouding your rational side, it's especially hard to take even the littlest steps.
Mm-hmm. Yes, I can. Yeah, I totally know that feeling when I think especially when you're feeling that sort of heightened anxiety and it's at the peak, it can feel almost paralyzing to try and move forward. And I think that's always the hardest step is when you're feeling that, or whether it's depression or anxiety, you know, I think any sort of like mental health difficulty or even just very overwhelming level of stress, no matter what it is, when it's at that heightened state, it can be so difficult to take that first step forward. But I think just making those tiny steps. So for me, that would be eating a healthy plant-based meal, or if it's getting myself into a yoga class, something like that. The hardest things to do in those moments are often the things that are going to propel us forward and ultimately are the best things for us. And they are the ones that are going to sort of alleviate some of that and start to chip away at those intense, sort of stressful, anxiety-ridden feelings, and allow us to start to take the other steps that we need to do in order to alleviate some of those feelings.
Now, to add on to all of that, we have seasonal affective disorder, and here we are, it's December in New York, where I am. So seasonal affective disorder can affect people differently based on where they live and how much sunshine they have. You kept mentioning November as being your trigger month. Mm-hmm. Let's just talk a little bit about seasonal affective disorder and what we can do about it.
Yes. So seasonal affective disorder, and it can swing both ways. For some people, it can actually affect them in the summer and cause sort of more manic symptoms and things like that. For me, it always strikes in the winter time. And I think that sort of time shift that happens in November when the clocks roll back and we have even less daylight, or the daylight hours, you know, just end much earlier. So the sun goes down around 4 or 4:30 this time of year. It really can intensify those feelings. And that's often when people start feeling either depressed or anxious. In the past, there wasn't as much known about the sort of anxiety that goes along with seasonal affective, but it is becoming a more common understanding of that. So it can be these overlapping sort of depressed or flat affect feelings along with anxiety. And in order to help that, I mean, there are many things you can do, from light boxes, which you can just sit in front of a light box for 30 minutes a day. That's often something people will do. But my approach has really been sort of a collection of habits that are simple, but implemented on a daily basis have a very, very powerful effect. And so for me, that's really been sort of exercise, finding peace and calm through meditation or yoga. And then the thing that's really provided the most consistent level of relief from the seasonal affective has been eating a whole foods plant-based diet and adhering to that as closely as I can, with a little bit of flexibility too. I think it's important to have an element of self-compassion and understanding if, you know, you're craving something that's maybe not the thing that makes you feel greatest, but it just is what you're feeling that you want to eat in that moment. So like a vegan cookie or more processed vegan pizza, something like that, you know?
Mm-hmm. Well, this is a repetitive theme on this program, and we hear it a lot, and that is that exercise, a whole food plant-based diet, meditation, and a subtitle of exercise is yoga, which kind of links to meditation, and self-love. This is a recipe for feeling good, all of these things. And I was happy to hear in your personal story that your husband came along and you had that great support and love behind you. I think love is probably the most important of all of these ingredients. And when we are not feeling love, it's especially hard to accomplish any of these things. I like to say tune in love on this program, and I like to send out love to everyone that's listening and kind of feel it come back to me. But can you talk a little bit about love?
Yes, I completely agree. I think it's so important when you're kind of emanating those vibrations of love and putting out that energy into the world. It really does circle back. And I think just having that support from family, friends, acquaintances, it's just absolutely imperative to feeling supported and healthy and implementing things in your life that allow you to thrive. It's so much easier when you have a support network and people that believe in you. And even if they don't understand the exact steps that you're taking, or the habits or choices or lifestyle that you're following, just to know that that support is there from them and that they're willing to listen is all that matters and can make or break your efforts.
And there are people who are alone and don't feel love. And if you're listening, and if I'm talking to you right now, I want you to know I'm sending you love right now. I'm sending the world love. And I'm doing it somewhat selfishly because it feels good. Like you said, it comes back to us. But what the world needs now is love, sweet love, more than ever. I have to keep reminding myself of that. And that's why I like to tune in love during this hour. Now, let's talk about how we do that with your food in particular. So let's say we're having a difficult day, that afternoon slump has come around. What do you recommend?
Oh, gosh. It really depends on the type of sort of snack cravings that you have. But for me, I love an afternoon juice. There's actually a juice in the book. There's only one juice recipe in the entire book, but it's one that I recommend in the afternoon because it kind of perks up my spirit and just offers a big boost of energy. It has a bit of a kick to it because there's a little bit of jalapeno in the juice itself. So that one's great. I also love smoothies. I think it's really difficult to go wrong with a good smoothie. And I think especially bananas and things like that have a lot of mood boosting tryptophan and other minerals and vitamins that just tend to energize us. Those are great. And then if you like a heartier pick-me-up, then there's really great trail mix bars or cookies in the book and a whole variety of things.
Yes, yum. It does take energy, though, and I'm just wondering how the best way to motivate and inspire people to plan and organize and prepare, as you said, prepare to conquer instead of prepare to fail in your book. That first boost, it's like, you know, we all know we should exercise, and once we're in the gym and once we finish, we're like, we're so glad we did it. But that momentum to get there, that momentum to get into the kitchen. Do you have any prepare, plan, tricks that have helped you along the way?
Yes. So a couple, and a couple for a different points in terms of where you're at in making something. So for example, for grocery shopping, I used to find that to be an incredibly daunting task at the end of a long day. And I think a lot of us do, especially if the grocery store is really busy. So I finally, a few years ago, started making a habit that on my way home from work on Thursday or Friday, usually Friday, I would stop at the same grocery store right around the same time, and I would grocery shop then. And I think because it was at the end of the week, that sort of end of the week momentum really inspired me and carried me through the aisles and just made it less of a daunting task and just more of a, I don't know, it almost became enjoyable. And seeing the same people working at the store and other shoppers, it just, the routine and habit around that, I think, is so important. Of course, it always is hard in the beginning, but if you can put in that effort to get going at first, it does start to reinforce and sustain itself in terms of that, building that habit up. And then another thing I love to do is to set aside a period of time on Sunday and just prepare some of the meals for my week in advance. So preparing bigger batches. So like with the trail mix cookies, that's not something that you're going to whip up in the afternoon when you're taking a break from work or something like that. You'd really want to prepare it ahead of time and then have a whole supply of things ready for you to grab on a moment's notice. And that to me is a huge help during the week, because it's really tempting to reach for something that maybe isn't going to make us feel the best if we're not prepared or haven't taken the time to make better, healthier choices readily available for ourselves.
My favorite way of looking at planning and preparing things for myself in the future is to think of it as a gift to myself in the future. So when I'm drinking that green juice that I had made, what I like to do is I make green juice for the week. I have a green juice every day and I freeze them. And when I take that out and I'm drinking it once it's defrosted, it's like this great gift that I made for myself. Anytime there's something ready to go in the refrigerator, it's like, thank you. And it's this great self-love. So when we're talking about tuning in love, you can think about the things you don't like to do. And if you can turn it around and think it's a way to love yourself, a way to show gratitude for you, and then you get to reap the benefits later.
Oh, absolutely. I completely agree, Karen. And I heard this quote, it was about a year ago, and it was around the time I was finishing up the book and just feeling really overwhelmed with cooking for myself and making sure that I was preparing things ahead of time. Because I think it happens to the best of us, even if you're used to making things and making all these meals, it still can just be overwhelming if you're having a busy week or depending on the time of year or what's going on. And this quote I heard, it was basically shifting this sort of mental dialogue that goes on in all of our heads that often says, I should do this or I need to do this, to I want to do this. And I think that aligns with that sort of self-love mentality. Like, I want to take care of myself, so I want to make these foods, or I want to go to the gym and work out, or I want to go to yoga class. So just that little shift really helped me in that moment. And it sounds so small and kind of silly, but it really does make a big difference when we think about what we want to do for ourselves rather than what we feel like we have to do.
Absolutely. And it's the little things, because we can feel so overwhelmed. If we can just make subtle little changes, that'll make a big difference. That's powerful.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So what I do, I have a nonprofit, Responsible Eating and Living, and I've been a broken record for decades because I became a vegetarian as a teenager and a vegan at 30, and I'm 58 now. So I've been vegan for 28 years, and I've like read every book, and I've got a ton of cookbooks, and it's all about plant food for me forever. And I can preach. And what I've learned to do is only offer information when people ask.
Mm-hmm.
And because I don't want to give it to people who don't want it. But I can often be in a conversation with someone who has asked and has expressed concern about pains they're feeling or some way they're not feeling well, and I offer information that might be helpful. And I always tell these people that it's their choice. They can choose to do whatever they want to do. I'm not going to tell them what to do, but I offer information. But sometimes I get back the excuses why they can't do what I'm suggesting. What is that? And what do you recommend for people that are just continually knocking themselves down about why they can't do something that'll make them feel better?
This is a tough one for me. I think from a psychologist's perspective too, working with adolescents, you know, there's a lot of excuses. We all have excuses for why we're not doing something. I have learned to come from the perspective of someone really has to be ready. Like I think their curiosity and asking the questions is sort of the first step in moving towards finding that solution for themselves, him or herself. But until they're ready to adopt new habits and to do the hard work, because new habits are hard to implement. You know, I think that's a thing. We want something easy, but oftentimes the best things for us are more difficult to implement. It's not sort of a quick fix thing. And we really have to, I think that's where that self-love comes in too. Like you really have to love yourself to implement these habits or these changes, because it does take some work and it does take a commitment. So I do come from the perspective that I think people have to be ready to make that change. But just in asking the questions, to me, that's saying, okay, well, I'm curious about this. And the more curious you become, the more connected and aware you become to how maybe those habits are helping other people, or in both of our cases, how a plant-based lifestyle is allowing us to live life more fully and allowing us to thrive.
Very good. Now you work with children. What age groups?
I work with high schoolers.
Okay.
So yeah, so 14 to 18. Predominantly the school I'm at is divided into two schools, and the portion I'm at is sophomores through seniors in high school.
Those are very difficult ages.
Yes, they can be. I love them though. They're very inspiring and full of life for sure.
Yeah. But it's a time when the hormones are raging and things can be very challenging and confusing. These very often, we're so concerned with everyone's opinion around us, and we haven't developed a strong foundation in ourselves. It's very an emotional time, and I know food plays a big picture. Do you have any consistent recommendations with regard to food and teenagers?
For the teenagers that I work with, I often won't go there unless the parents are asking or unless they're curious, just because it's technically outside of my realm when I'm within the school boundaries.
Sure.
But when students are curious, I oftentimes, if I mention that I'm vegan, they start asking questions why. So I really try and just talk about what food has done for me and how it's benefited me in my life. But I think in general, I will try and steer students away. Like if they're feeling very energetically down and just are having difficulties with getting up in the morning, things like that, I'll often inquire about diet and just So, you know, try and nudge them back, because some of these kids are, I mean, they're eating predominantly candy and very processed foods throughout the day. And it's almost impossible to feel our best when the food is so, so highly processed and so packed with sugar. So I will ask questions.
Absolutely. I'm thumbing through your book and the pictures are gorgeous. I'm looking at some recipes that are absolutely irresistible. Superseded pesto pizza with the rainbow veggies, mozzarella, and sweet potato crust.
Yes, that's a favorite. That's actually on the cover too.
Yeah, I'm like, oh, that's right. Yeah, I'm licking the page. It just looks so good. And there's nothing bad in here.
Oh, thank you.
It's all good food. And then right now, there's just a few right next to each other that just look amazing. Mushroom lentil sliders with herbed hemp aioli.
Those are a favorite. And all these recipes too were tested. All of the recipe testers that I worked with were meat eaters. So none of them are vegetarian or vegan. I really wanted everyone to love the recipes in this book. So
yeah, that's important. You know, I know, we put up a lot of recipes on our website, and even when we test them, like my partner Gary will make a recipe and then I'll make it. It's never the same. Everybody's got a unique style. So you learn a lot when different people coming from different backgrounds and may not have the same appliances or anything try a recipe out.
Oh, absolutely. It is interesting what some of the feedback will say. And it translates very differently to different kitchens. Even just an oven can make the world of difference in how something bakes. So it's important to kind of take all of that into consideration when you're writing recipes.
Absolutely. I just want to mention one more recipe because this picture is just crazy. And that's the shaved carrot Reuben with special sauce and Swiss cheese. And those little folded pieces of carrot, you know what they look like.
Yes. Yeah, that is one of the recipes I'm probably most proud of, just because I haven't seen it done before. And it just, the idea just kind of came to me out of nowhere. And I was like, you know, I'm curious about this, but I honestly wasn't sure it would work out and it really did.
It's genius. It looks like cold cuts. You know, when you see an advertisement for a cold cut sandwich and they roll the cold cuts up, well, the carrots here are folded just like that. And it really looks fantastic. I can't wait to try that.
Thank you. Yes, you'll have to try it. It's really, really good.
Well, Ashley, thank you for joining me on It's All About Food. And you're doing amazing work with your blog, Blissful Basil, and with your new book of the same name, Blissful Basil. Thank you for joining me.
Thank you so much for having me.
Yeah, happy holidays.
You too.
Okay. All right, that was Ashley Melillo. Check out her new cookbook, Blissful Basil. It's really stunning, beautiful. I love the recipes. Okay, now I just wanted to say before we take a quick break and bring on my next guest, somehow I never remember to bring this up, but you know, this is a live call-in show, and if you are listening live, even though I know most of you are listening later, you can call in with comments and questions. I love to hear from you. The number is 1-888-874-4888, and you can always email me at info@realmeals.org. info@realmeals.org. All right. Let's take a little break, and when we come back, we will be speaking with Stephen M. Wise of the Non-Human Rights Project.